Go Mountain Goats podcast, episode 23. This is going to be a bit of a tea-slurping episode, I think. I am delighted to be sitting down to a conversation with Murdo Jameson, who's a Dingwall-based climber, who's particularly prolific in the Northwest, and we've been for our annual catch-up run today, and we've, definitely... spend quite a lot of the time chatting about how good places like the Northwest are. So, I suppose, first thing, Murdo, thanks for agreeing to do this. Finally managed to convince you to let me ask you some questions. I suppose just generally first, like, how did you first kind of get into climbing and the hills? What was your path into that?
Well, thanks very much for inviting me along. We've talked about this for... several years, haven't we? So my introduction would have been through Scouts in Tain. I'm from Tain originally. And we had a very good Scout leader. And we'd go camping and go abseiling, climbing. And I just got so interested in the outdoors from that point of view. Not very into mainstream sport. I joined the Withers Hill Walking Club when I was like 15, which is really good because I would go out every second weekend, Munro bagging, and I was just, I was psyched on that. And then from that group, I ended up just naturally going scrambling. Then on to climbing with another member. When I reached the age of 16 or 17 through Scouts, I joined the Mountain Rescue Team as a trainee member, the Dundonald Mountain Rescue Team. And there I met likes of Paul Tattersall and Ray Wilby. And they got me into climbing. And then I met Andrew, who was Ray's son, or is Ray's son. And yeah, since then, like, we've done a lot of climbing together. And that would be it. Yeah, that's how we got into it. And just...
okay.
Spent a lot of time in the Northwest. Andrew, obviously, he's a bit older than me, so he had the car, and we would always go over to the West Coast, go climbing. Brilliant. Do lots of severes, VSs, fall off them.
I often, when people ask me about the start of what my interest, like, I haven't maybe flagged up the Scouts as being like, so useful, like, in my life as well.
Like, I'm not involved. In that anymore, but I owe a lot to that. When I think back to it, you know, I went through the Beavers, Cubs and Scouts thing till I left when I was like 19. So in some ways you look back and go, God, that gave me so much. I guess we had a very inspirational Scout leader, which made, you know, the difference.
Definitely. I can remember lots of different specific camping or like scout camps and things where you just learn to be comfortable kind of in the outdoors, and that's obviously a good starting point. But you've moving forward, you've climbed a lot all over the place, and we're going to touch on some of those different places. But one of the things that I thought would be really cool would be kind of focus on the Northwest Highlands. Like, maybe you can tell me if it's true or not, but I definitely feel like you're one of the active players in terms of climbers who kind of live near the Northwest and kind of going up there, going out into, you know, like wild mountain crags and repeating hard routes and doing new routes and, you know, summer and winter. Mm-hmm. What's so good about the Northwest?
What's so good about the Northwest? Well, it's the Northwest to start, so that's why it's so good. For me, it's accessible. So I'm not quite answering your question, but I'll come back to it. Yeah, it's accessible. When you brought up in Dingwall, I live in Dingwall now, Inverness area, it's only an hour and a bit across the road. So we're quite fortunate to have it. For me, climbing in the Northwest, there's so much variety. You've got the Lewisian ice to go rock climbing on, you've got the sandstone, you've got the sea, you've got the mountains, cragging, big mountain routes. It's vast, it's open, It does feel empty sometimes. You know, when I first started climbing, it feels empty and it's great, a little sense of adventure. And I can definitely recall just being about in the mountains yourself later on in the day, perhaps, and you just got the place to yourself. It's quite nice. The sunsets are great. The colours at this time of year. I quite like the fact that the Northwest requires effort, especially in winter, to get into the mountains. It's quite a commitment to trudge into Ben A or Ben Van. That's where I would be going, but hey, you've got things like Sleagh, Benmore, Ben Jerrig Moor. These are proper committing places to go. Hey, I've not been in there. I'm getting to that age where I'm beginning to develop an interest for going there. They're big adventures to have in Scotland, so it's pretty good to sort of have that on our doorstep. And I think the Northwest can give you, I don't know, where am I going with that? You could go there and make your own adventure. You could go cragging, or you can go and have a full-on adventure that requires a five-hour walk-in to go on a serious mountain route and have, as Roger Webb and Simon Richardson, they would go and have these like 36-hour epics or whatever. Yeah, you can go and have a smaller adventure somewhere. The variety. I think that's
huge variety. And yeah, just that, like you said, that feeling of space. And they definitely feel, they're not the highest mountains in Scotland, but they definitely feel, obviously there's a lot of Munros up there, but they're not the very highest mountains, but they definitely feel like big, committing mountains.
Yeah, they feel, and especially if you're like the only person out climbing that day. You know, I've been on Ben Van, and you've been like the only team there, and it's all very nice, and then it gets dark, and you're still on the crag, and it just suddenly feels, it sort of feels quite serious, and you're sort of, as a crow flies, quite close to a lot of things, but you still are several hours away, you know, effort from getting to the road or whatever. So that's what I really enjoy about it.
Yeah, you know. Yeah, you put the effort in, and there's something probably quite hard to define, but very special about being the only person in a crag, you know, in a whole quarry, when you know other places are going to be quite busy or busier.
Yeah, you know, yeah, you go over to the Cairngorms. Hey, and I love climbing in the Cairngorms, don't get me wrong, but it's just a different vibe. You go into the northern quarries, and quite rightly so, they're busy, they're accessible. Ben Nevis, the same. The northwest is getting busier. You go out in winter, there are going to be other teams there now, you know.
Yes.
You go to Ben A car park in winter, and the car park's full. There's climbers there.
The resident reindeer.
And the reindeer is always there looking for food as well.
It's a deer, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Getting food. What's the climbing scene like in the Northwest?
The scene's quite sparse. People are dotted around the place. It depends if you start including folk coming over from the east like myself, because you've got to remember, I'm an east coaster, I'm not a west coaster. So, in my time, the key people would be like Sir Paul Tattersall, who's based in Gairloch. He's maybe not doing as much climbing as he used to, but he's doing a lot of developing the sport climbing. So he's, you know, right activist in the rock climbing scene since him and Angela moved up, late 90s, early 2000s. Ian Taylor and Tess Fry are based up in Ullapool. They're up there. You've got Lawrence Hughes as well. These are key people who have been active in developing the area. I'm sure I missed out a few folk. And then obviously there was Martin Moran, based in Loch Carron, who was a keen figure in the Northwest, particularly in winter. But as I said, they're all quite spread out. And what one things about the Northwest is you're always driving to meet people, or there's a lack of climbing partners.
Okay.
So That's why I was saying, do you start including folk from the East Coast? Because I guess a lot of folk do travel over from the East to go and use the Northwest. But the Highlands are sparse. It's definitely a challenge living up there, is finding climbing partners to go out with.
And you just made me think of, like, famously, like, Mick Fowler, coming up for weekends from London, wasn't it?
Yeah.
From him with whoever he was climbing with. Like, would that have been like in the 70s?
Would that be not be? It'd be later than that, surely.
Later than that, yeah.
In the 80s, maybe.
Yeah.
Late 80s, early 90s.
And that must have felt so wild because there was so much less activity.
For those guys, it would be, yeah, it's almost a different sport. You and I talk a lot about social media. You get a lot of information off it. For Mick Fowler and that generation, there isn't that information there. So that's proper commitment coming up in your weekend from London to go a new routing in Ben Van, Ben A, Leagach, with very little information. The roads were rubbish.
Yeah, yeah.
That, you know, I don't think I can comprehend that level of psych and drive. And they're doing some pretty committing routes, you know? So, yeah, it's really impressive.
What do you have? I suppose we've touched on several different areas. Like, do you have a favourite area in that part of Scotland? Or is that too hard to answer?
I find it quite hard to sort of pinpoint that any sort of specific favourite area. You know, all areas I climb all over the UK. I love Scotland. I love the Cairngorms. I love Glencoe and the Ben. But the Northwest, I guess, because I've spent a lot of my time over there since I was, you know, a teenager. I particularly love climbing in Torridon. I enjoy, you know, Ben A has always been a favourite place to go. I've had so many adventures there, both summer and winter. And, you know, I've done some harder rock climbs there, some of the harder winter climbs there. And I just love the rock architecture there. It's absolutely amazing. I love going over there for a run as well. You can leave the house at lunchtime, nip over, go for several hours just running around the place and just, yeah, admire it. I love it. I'll never get bored of walking around into Conor McFerrica or running around and then just seeing the triple buttress. It's, still gets to me that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm at risk of answering, giving my answer to the question I asked you, but yeah, like, Torridon's just such a cool place for so many different aspects of mountain sports, isn't it? And like you say, going around the corner and seeing the triple buttress.
Yeah.
It feels wild. It feels away from it, away from civilization.
Yeah.
And even, you know, I've done way less in there and way easier stuff than you, but like, even I've had like a great variety of, like, for some rock routes, the good ones with you.
Yeah.
I got terrified the whole time, and it was like six, I think we'd done two routes in the summer sometime, and it was like 6 p.m. and you wanted to do a third one, and I was just broken.
What did we do that day? We did Seeds of Destruction, you did that, and then we did Sumo. I remember those two really good E3s on Barry's Wall.
And I'm sure you'll come on to this with the climbs you're going to talk about, but like, it's so steep and you can't really see holds that easily from below, but there's lots of incredibly positive holds.
The quartzite's intimidating. it's sheer, it's steep, but as you just said there's lots of in-cuts, lots of positive edges and positive gear placements. It's pumpy physical climbing in summer and winter. And yeah, I guess that's why I quite like it. It lends to your strength of being like to hang on and search for these good holds. And as I said there, I touched upon, you know, it does follow crack system, so it's generally pretty safe to climb on. You just got to avoid those loose blocks at the top. It's pretty shattered, but yeah, it's good fun.
So yeah, that was two routes. My eyes were on stocks. But, oh my god, this is crazy, exposed and everything. And then 6 p.m. you wanted to do another route. I was like,
fiddly,
no,
I'd had
no,
enough.
You can't do a third route. Yeah. Maybe a better question would have been, where's the place in the Northwest that you've spent the most time? Would that maybe be Torridon? And
yeah, I guess that would be me. Yeah, I'd probably spent quite a lot of time in that neck of the woods. Yeah.
So you can maybe relate to one of the things I bang on about sometimes is like somewhere you go a lot in the mountains, you've got these layers of memories that just kind of all add into each other. And because it's so varied conditions, whether, you know, summer, winter, who you're with, every time it's just kind of adding an extra layer.
Oh yeah.
Sort of deepening your relationship with the place, I suppose.
Yeah.
I'd say, yeah. Yeah. And what is a typical year like for you?
It's broad. People that know me will get frustrated because I like to do a bit of everything. So if you start at the start of the year, like January into February, March, yeah, there's hopefully snow in Scotland and I'll want to go winter climbing. That is my primary focus. But now I've bought myself a set of skis. That's definitely added another dimension to what do I do with myself. So going winter climbing, whether that's mixed climbing or going ice climbing, and that's not necessarily in the Northwest. You know, I could be in the Ben or the Cairngorms or wherever's in suitable condition. As I said, skiing's entered my life now, but I don't rule out days going sport climbing, bouldering in those months of the year. I feel it's really important to go rock climbing as well if you get the opportunity, because I guess I'm more of a rock climber than I am a winter climber. So that'd be the start of the year, and then moving into the spring, yeah, typically like everyone else, I'll find myself going cragging, sport climbing to regain some fitness. And then as you enter the late spring into the summer, trying to get into the mountains, to dry out a bit, go rock climbing it up higher up. Still spend time with sport climbing as well. Sport climbing keeps you fit. You do harder moves rather than leg shuffling. And then as we move into the autumn, I tend to focus a bit more on cragging. You've built up a lot more endurance from the summer, so it's a good time to execute harder routes, I always think. You know, you've built up, you're mentally strong from trad climbing through the summer. You've got, you know, you're in tune with the rock. So I see it as a good time to go and do harder head points or whatever. And then coming into the winter, obviously you've got your early season mixed climbing come November, December. But throughout that, I'll obviously be looking at, well, can I get out bouldering or sport climbing, looking at that opportunity. And then throughout the year, I'll be going running as well, or walking, running, fast walking. Not like running, like you go running. And just because I enjoy being in the mountains as well. I love just, you know, going out by myself, doing a lap of Leagac or something. It's always quite good fun. Doesn't matter what season it is.
No, I was just thinking, sometimes people get hung up on whether they're running or walking, and I'm always just like, well, it's like moving efficiently across the terrain, isn't it? Like today,
It's a mixture of both, wasn't it? So you're walking the uphills and you're jogging the flats, and well,
it was, yeah, moving while we were having a good old chin wag, and
yeah.
So a three-part question. I just wanted to get a wee bit into kind of more detail of, well, what these experiences are actually kind of like. So I thought I'd ask you, like, what are the sort of three climbs, or could you talk about three climbs that have been particularly memorable to you, that you're maybe particularly proud of in the Northwest, that kind of give us a flavour of the variety and things?
There's quite a lots of good roots and lots of good memories there. But I think one that I'll never forget about was doing a new route with Ian Small on Carnmore called 100 Years of Solitude. And I still don't think I'll ever have a better experience or a better rock climbing experience than that day. So that was back in 2014. And Ian and I had been in the previous weekend and we'd been rock climbing. And then Ian had scouted out. He'd abseiled down this wall. So for people that know the cliff, it's the big orange wall between Carnmore Corner and the Orange Bowl line that just goes straight up the middle of it. And he'd scouted it out. And I remember just sat and thought, kind of, yeah, that looks beyond my pay grade. I'm not that interested. So we pack up and go home on whatever day. And then through the week, the forecast was shaping up good to go into Carnmore. And I must admit, I did have a bit of interest in it once I came away from the place. And so I sent it to Ian a message, going, oh, Carnmore looks good, do you want to go back in? And he goes like, yeah. So there was a good weather window on the Friday and Saturday, so we went back into Carnmore, and we walked to the top, we wrapped in, both played around on the route on an abseil rope, and then on the Saturday I think we both top roped it cleanly. And then Ian led it, and then I led it. And I just remember, for me, that climb represents physical hard climbing. It's run out. So to describe the climb, you do like a roughly about knee five pitch to this little sort of cave stance. You can make a nest of gear. Then you start doing this like pretty intricate, physically hard sequence up this wall. And then you're stabbing into this break, this juggy break that runs across the crag. And it's really run out with a lot of physical climbing. So the fall potential is quite big. But it's just so satisfying. And then you get some bomber gear in this break. And then some tricky moves, I seem to recall, above it up this crack line. Droppable moves. And then the angle eases. And I remember just, you know, getting through the section, going to the top of the cliff. I remember just standing on top in total disbelief because, to you know, only a week ago, this climb's well beyond me. Standing there, looking around, just the seas behind me, the mountains, there's still snow in the gullies of Ben Lair, a vengeance just looking at me. And I remember just taking a moment, just thinking, this is amazing. You know, you can't buy that experience. So that means a lot to me. Just that weekend there.
And that's an E86C.
So that was done. E86C. So we gave it that. And then just recently, a few other climbers have repeated it. I know some climbers from North Wales, Angus Killey and Callum Musket, came up and they had some photographers as well. So they got some cool photos of it. They reckon it was around French 7C climbing. So I would agree, run out. And then I know Callum Johnson's gone and done it. So it's kind of cool to see the route getting some attention, because I know it's a bit of an effort to go and get in there and go and set up a rope on it and faff around on it.
Well, for people who don't know Carnmore, maybe just say about the position and where it is, because I think you weren't that psyched on it as a venue to start with.
Yeah, Carnmore is a bit of an effort to get into, because people that know me, I hate mountain biking. Yeah, I've just gone and bought myself a mountain bike, but that's a different story. But you park at Pool U, you start at Pool U, and you cycle in for two or 3 hours to get in there. And the majority of it would be on your bike, unless you're me and you have to get off and push your bike over those drainage ditches with a heavy rucksack on. So it's a bit of an effort to get in there, and you can either take a tent in, which would be a pleasant experience, or you can stay in the barn, which is a bit miserable. So
it, it's got, has it got like bracken growing in?
Bracken growing in, the old tin roof, so with straps holding it down. So if it's a tall windy, the straps are vibrating, there's mice running around, I'm sure. Everything's grotty. But I remember last time I was in there, the stay had put these old mattresses in there. So definitely scored lucky each visit and got a mattress. Nice. Whilst other people have ended up on the floor.
So, reading your article, you write up about that as well. Yeah, you sort of said, at the time, I don't think I can beat this. This was such an amazing experience. So it's quite cool to hear you, you know, years later, still kind of...
Yeah, I don't think I'll ever do it. Like, I've gone... I wouldn't say my... the climbing CVs is extensive as some people's from around the world, but for me personally, I don't think I can beat that, because it's a, you know, it's so close to home. Yeah, it's an amazing, place, an amazing experience to have. So yeah, as I said earlier, I won't forget that. So yeah, sorry, that's a long answer to your question. That's only one route, so I'll try and keep the other too short. So another route that I guess still means a lot to me would be, I did a new route, actually. Well, not a new route, it's a winter climbed a rock route called Route of All Evil in Ben A, with my friend John Orr. So I would have done that in, was it 2014 or 2015, I can't remember. And that was a good experience. That it was, yeah, that cliff was in really good winter nick that winter. And I remember John and I, you know, we walked up. There's a lot of snow. Took forever. We dropped in. And, yeah, John hadn't climbed in there before, where I had done a few routes. And I've got my eye in. So I understood the place, and it's quite intimidating, quite steep, that wall. And I'm just pacing back and forth, like trying to decide what to climb. Poor John is just standing there, just shaking his head. So I convinced him that he wanted to do this E2 called, you know, as I said, Route of All Evil. So he very kindly agreed to have a look at it. So he did the first pitch, which was great, and then this brought us up to a ledge, and then I set off up this 5B corner. And yeah, it's modern mixed climbing on that wall, steep, positive, but very strenuous, very physical. So you go up this crack line, then transfer left into this corner and up this corner, and then you get, it talks about, you get to this little belay, and I remember getting up this corner going, there's no belay. So it was, you're basically stopping mid-move to make a full-on hanging belay. So a bit of faffer when John came up, but did an amazing job. He ended up just making a belay just below me. And then the crux of the route would be going up to this little roof and traversing left, very thin feet, and then coming round the left side of it and then transferring right onto a ledge. It's all quite positive, and then you get to this bit and the angle just eases a bit, so all of a sudden it's quite insecure and you're absolutely boxed, and suddenly your gear is quite below you. So I definitely felt pretty engaged in that. And for folk that know me, you'll remember this from our climbing days, I'm not the fastest winter climber, I'm not a modern hero by any means. And I remember getting to this belay, and yeah, time's marching on, it's January or February. John seconds the pitch, like, good effort, because he's been in this hanging belay for ages. And he's like, I think we should go down. I'm like, John, we're going to the top. Because we, by this point, we'd joined another route called Hydroponicum. So we've got the crux of that route to do. So it wasn't like a stressful conversation, but John, I think, was, you'd sort of had enough. But I was just, we're going to the top. And but by this point in my climbing career, I'd done quite a lot of climbing with Martin Moran. And Martin had always instilled, he was out there for the adventure. And Martin was getting to the top. We always finished in the dark. And so doing hard climbing in the dark, I was quite in tune with at that time.
Okay.
So it didn't intimidate me. So I convinced John that I'll go and have a look at this next pitch. And if it's not good, we can wrap off. So that was the deal.
Because what time would this be?
Right? Oh, I don't know. Like 4 or 5 o'clock or something. It's not completely dark for me. But I've got my head torch sort of on because it's dull at this point. And then I set off up this wall and then come back down. Not to the village. I thought, if I go to the village, John will talk me out of it. And then eventually commit. And then that's me on it. And, you know, however long, an hour or two later, I eventually get to the top. At this point, it's pitch dark. And I just remember just this euphoric feeling of satisfaction having done that. And then John, like, did an amazing job seconding up that, because he'd been cold with a rucksack on, been there for ages. It's dark. It's a lonely place being down there, because, you know, you're quite, it's a long way below. So I remember I'm quite proud of that route. Just trying hard, because I'd done 3 hard pitches for me that day, so I was physically pretty exhausted. So that to me means a lot. And also, just as I said earlier, Benny spent a lot of time there and just love climbing in there. So,
and one thing that strikes me about like the harder climbs, whether it's summer or maybe particularly winter, is like it's real endurance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like you can't rush it when you're trying to find gear placements and placements, and
when you're strung out on these routes, you can't just suddenly go, I've had enough, can we go home? And I think that's what I secretly enjoy with the whole thing, is the commitment you get yourself. We were talking about it earlier. With climbing, you slowly get yourself into these positions and you build it up, but you also can't rush it. It can be quite serious, but it's all sort of under control. It's all quite calculated at the same time. It's methodical. You're unlocking it as you go. And the minute it gets dark, things just slow down. But it's also part of the satisfaction as well. So, yeah, I quite enjoy it. And I think that's what, again, from Martin, as I said earlier, I learned that from him. He wasn't fazed by it. And I think that just sort of, yeah, once I saw Martin not being fazed by it, I thought, all right, okay, cool. You can do these things.
Massive big days out.
Because
there's a real psychological effect on you when it's starting to get dark, or you know it's going to get dark. Like, I suppose I'm talking mostly about a running perspective.
Yeah.
But even, yeah, in the hills, particularly in winter, when you know it's going to be getting dark, there's quite a sort of primal sort of
signal to get
out of here, get somewhere safe. But actually, once it is dark, you've got your head torch.
It's that transition, and I think you've described it very well there. It's easy in the light, and it's easy-ish when you've got your head torch on. It's that, as you say, that transition. Oh, it's getting darker. Oh, it's getting darker. You just wish you could just hurry up so that it's like, okay, cool. Well, my world is simple. It's just what I can see with my head torch. But with these modern head torches now, this is amazing. You know, they light up absolutely everything. It's great. So, that's another long answer. And one last route, again, is Godzilla on Giant's Wall and Ben Van. And I did that with Ian Small and Andy Ingalls. So essentially, Godzilla is a direct start into The Godfather, which was originally done by Paul Tatchell and Martin. And that means a lot to me, that route. That top corner, I was always intrigued by this top corner after, because I guess I'm Paul mentored me when I was a lot younger, and I remember the stories from Paul about him and Martin and that route. So, okay, we didn't climb the Godfather, we were direct into it, and then leading that pitch, I was just thinking of Martin and Paul in the dark doing that. And of course, at the time, the kit was not modern, so it's hard climbing with older kits.
When would they have done the first ascent, roughly?
When did they do the... I think it was around about 2004, okay. I think, roughly. I can't quite remember. But they certainly wouldn't have had Petzl-nomics or leashless tools. And
yeah, so everything was heavier.
Everything was a bit heavier, slower. So yeah, it was always... And then I had the fear of... I know when Pete Benson and Guy Robertson... I think AS President was there as well. When they went to go and try the second ascent of that corner... One of them fell off the top. So obviously that's at the back of your mind when you're going up that thing, going, God, these good climbers have fallen off this. So that was, it was good to do that route. And again, you end up in the dark in that thing.
Is that another massive sort of multi-pitch?
Yeah, it's, I don't know how many pitches Godzilla is. Was it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 or 8 pitches? Okay. So yeah, yeah, long so, enough. Yeah.
Another big... big day. Challenging, adventurous day out.
And also, climbing on Ben Van's intimidating. It's a mental challenge. For me, especially, because I get scared in these things. So, being able to go in there and look at the cliff and then break it down. And you're just breaking it down into manageable chunks, really. And into pitches and then into where you are in the climb. And just controlling that,
Is that just when you were saying about getting scared on those things, like what? How does that look like? The breaking it down and keeping it controlled, is that kind of a constant factor, or how do I
manage that? Yeah. I guess I manage it. I'm not standing there going, oh, I'm scared. But I guess I definitely. How do I manage that? You manage it by just trying to keep it safe. Manage it by, you're just probing. You're just going up and you're just chunking it down. You've got, okay, big cliff. Oh, fine. And then this is where working out where the line goes. I think that's another thing, is knowing where you're going to, how the cliff works. And then just focusing on each pitch. And then even like, more smaller, like focusing on where you are and on it, and then just being aware. I'm not a terribly bold climber. I don't like being totally strung out in very serious situations, so I'm not adverse to backing off something either. So just always checking in with yourself and seeing where you are. Okay, there is times you do need to be bold, but you're making that judgment and risk assessment at the time. It's easy to sit here in a comfy couch, go, I won't do that. But when you're there in the situation, you're hyper alert, and you know you might make a different decision.
I feel like we're sort of touching into like the reason why all these kind of mountain sports are so good, so present. You're present in the moment. Yeah. It's like it's mindfulness. Yeah. You're sort of so. You know, you're not thinking about the problems at work.
There's no time to think about the problems at work. Yeah,
climbing even more than running, you're absolutely going to be in the moment. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's probably come across from the chat, but like, or some of it will have, but like themes linking these routes.
I guess we're touching and going back a bit. They all involve effort. You know, you're not rocky. You're not driving up. It's not North Wales. This, you know, you're driving along. Walk for half an hour. Everything involves a significant approach, in my mind. They're all in fairly wild settings. The environment's amazing. Climbing there is all open, as I touched on with Carn Mór. It's just a lovely place to climb. And I can say the same for Ben Van and Ben A. It's fast. It's steep. It's intimidating. The northwest, these sandstone cliffs are intimidating places, and I am weirdly attracted to that. I think the sandstone architecture is very cool. I think what else links it is they require, for me personally, a good level of personal fitness as well to get up these things. There's a physical element to it. You're not just going to, well, I'm not going to just rock up and do that. You've got to have a base, good mileage before you get stuck into these climbs. And then you've got to try hard. You've got to try hard to get these things done. And as I said, just touching back to what, you know, what Martin did, he showed me to try hard on winter routes. And yeah, you get up them and you try.
Changing tack a little bit, I was going to ask about any particular setbacks. Have you had any major injuries or anything?
Yeah, bed A is good for that.
This is a leading question slightly.
Yeah, I guess I've had a few, significant injuries in my time. One that you're not aware of, or no, you are aware of, I think, is Ben A. I was going to go climbing with a mutual friend of ours, Megan B.
Okay.
And we were going to go and do Grooving High. This was back in June 2007, I still remember it. And I was complaining about a sore stomach the day before. Mum's like, there's nothing wrong with you. Anyway, it turns out to be a burst appendix. I couldn't go climbing that day. So, yeah, Ben A, there we go. And that was me out of the game for a while after having my side ripped open. And then later that year, climbing...
So I love that was a burst appendix. Can't go climbing today. That's your immediate thought.
Yeah, sorry, Megan. I've got an appendicitis, you know. Can't go climbing. And then later that year, where you and I met, was in Rigmore Hospital. So what happened there was, again, been out with Megan, and we went to go and do West Buttress. It was in December, 25th of December 2007. And I don't know, some people will remember, it was like amazing weather, high pressure, everything was dry, so dry. So we walked in, and I think originally we were just going to go and do the quartzite tier, but the whole thing just looked so appealing. So yeah, let's just go and do West Buttress, the sandstone tier, the full thing. So we do the first pitch, that's fine. And then the second pitch, I'm leading and then clambering onto this ledge. I just reach up for this hold in the wall, which turns out to be a massive flake, which then just tumbles onto me. And obviously you're on easier terrain. I've got two runners in perhaps. And I just go for this monumental flyer down the buttress, bouncing off a few ledges as you do in that sort of terrain. So I'm just off to the side. Megan lowers me down to the ledge that runs across the cliff. So a bit of faff. I crawl back to her. We have a bad signal on our phone. You phone the rescue team. I remember feeling the embarrassment. I'll never forget that. Oh no. I don't want to do this. But you're also lying there like with a really sore body, going, I'm not going to abseil and walk off this thing. So at the time, Sea King came in and lifted me off, or both of us off, took me to Rigmore, and then that's when I met you. and I can't remember what department, well, it would have been orthopedics, yeah. And you were a junior doctor at the time. Yeah. So
Yeah, I think we had mutual friends. I wasn't on that ward, but I came to see you.
Yeah, okay.
Because what injury did you?
So at the time, I compressed one of my lumbar vertebrae. I can't remember which one. I didn't know, but I can't remember. And then I had a few hairline fractures in my pelvis. So yeah, I was in hospital for a couple of weeks over Christmas and New Year, which is a bit rubbish for everyone. And then just you get the rehab, you you get out of it. And I was back climbing by April or May. And then now, yeah, how old am I now? 35. That would have happened when I was 21. And now I feel my back. I definitely feel stiffness and pain. Okay. And you're at this point in your career, you're climbing your life, where you're going to go, I can either just not do anything about it and it will probably stop me in the future, or I can start addressing it by doing yoga and other things. I do a lot of core exercises for my own self anyway, but I think I might need to build in more regular routine of things that focus on my lower back. And then I blew my neck, let's not go into injuries, but yeah, shoulders, hamstrings, elbows, but that's all part of the game. You know, you're going to get injured if you're going to push yourself. And yeah, I tore my hamstring glute last year. I'm sitting here on the chair right now and it's still sore, but it's just it. You've got to learn to manage it. I think that's one thing I've learned with these injuries is acknowledge that you've had it, do the best you can to rehab it, and then keep using it and manage it. You know, you'll know yourself when you're running. I'm sure you're not completely injury free. You'll have issues, but you make it work.
Well, I'm just thinking, I'm learning from you, because I'm quite bad for whenever I get a bit of a niggle, but, you know, catastrophizing it, because obviously running's really important to me. And sort of that's not helpful, your approach where you say, well, yeah, look, kind of assess the damage, rehab it as much as you can, and then kind of manage it, control going forwards, seems like a really positive way to be about it.
So, you know, let's not get into the intricacies of training, but I've got a friend, Peter Hurd, who some folk will know, and he's way ahead of the game in terms of reading all this stuff and simple things like doing isometric hangs, one arm hangs in a bar. It sounds weird, but it actually fixed my elbows, just hanging off a bar one armed, just trying really hard. And you think, but that's really bad for your elbows. You know, climbers get golfer's elbow or climber's elbow, whatever you want to call it. My elbows are fine. They've never been better. So a way to manage elbow tendonitis for me is just to like do these bar hangs, which I, you know, so just building that into your routine and warming up. I spend a lot of time trying to warm up these days, warming up my hamstrings. See your body holistically. You know, I think that's one thing that I'm becoming more aware of, is we all spend all this time hanging on our fingers and campsing, but you use your legs, pull your legs, your hamstrings, you know, go and do some squats and lunges. You know, you need strong legs for these things. So.
I just wanted to ask you about your work. You work for Active Schools. I wanted to just hear a wee bit about what that involves and if you've listened to my previous podcast, you probably heard me talk about kids being active and how, you know, it's a great thing.
So my role as an Active Schools coordinator, so I've been based in Kinlochbervie and then in Golspie, and at the moment, not to bore your listeners, I'm temporarily covering in Dingwall. So Active Schools is funded by Sports Scotland, and it's to get children more active more often. So essentially what you're doing is creating opportunities for children to participate more in sport and physical activity to live that healthier life. You're trying to expose children to a range of activities, try and buy their interest into living a healthier lifestyle, because we all know that some people don't live healthily. So I guess if you try to capture children when they're younger into being more physically active, they might carry that on into the future, and in turn, they're being active for the rest of their life. So I think it's really important to to give children the opportunity to take part in sport. The other part of it would be we do a lot of leadership with senior pupils, so giving them an opportunity to take ownership, to lead sessions, to give these guys other skill sets, because obviously they go to school and they learn academic stuff. But as you know, in the working world, there needs to be interaction with other people, communicate, session structures, and so doing leadership work with senior pupils, where they get an opportunity to lead sessions, it gives them something else, another skill for them when they leave school.
It's actually life skills, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know what you think about this question. How does the future of rock climbing in the Northwest look?
How does the future of Northwest sport climbing look?
Or climbing? Just broaden it, yeah. What do you see sort of changing or do you hope will change in the Northwest in general? It could be summer, winter, sport.
I guess, how do I see it looking? The Northwest is definitely on the map. It's on everyone's agenda. There's all these new guidebooks out, so the information about it is more accessible. Everyone's got a good camera, so people know. So it's going to attract lots of climbers. COVID saw it, you know, through the last few years, lots of climbers coming up and enjoying the route. In terms of development, I think there'll always be continual development of new routes to go and get done. I myself am not that driven and new route I'm not a new route activist, but I do feel as I should go and put a rope down some stuff and have a look. You know, I'm sure there's big blank walls in Bene that need attention. It's just a bit of effort to get there. How does it look? I think sport climbing, that will just slowly develop back.
And it sounds like the sport climbing is already quite a good. Sport climbing in the Northwest is already quite a.
There's a lot of sport climbing in the Northwest, which was originally developed by Paul Tattersall, and then Andrew Wilby's got on board with it.
Okay.
And the pair of them have been developing lots of crags. Ian Taylor as well, and Lawrence. These guys as well have been developing more around Ullapool. Saying that though, Ian developed Loch Maree Crag down by Gairloch. And I think it's been a really positive thing for Northwest, because you can go, if you're a visiting climber, you can go trad climbing and you can go sport climbing. And a lot of these venues are a bit weatherproof. So if the weather's a bit rubbish, you can still go out and have a good day climbing. You get a bit more climbing done. You can go into lots of ethical debates about whether there should be bolts, not bolts. But a lot of these crags they lend themselves to sport climbing. You know, they're steep. They're not huge amounts of protection on them. And I think I definitely benefited from it, and I think everyone else certainly benefits from going sport climbing there. It's just making sure that boundaries are maybe set.
Yeah, do you think there's quite good stewardship, I suppose, of within the community of?
I think
keeping like the mountains, like Ben A.
Yeah, like you got it. You know yourself, bolts. I very much doubt bolts are ever going to encroach into the mountains of Tordon. Like, that's a given. They're never going to go there. You do need to, I guess, in the glens, it's a bit different. But you look at Paul Tattersall and Ian and Lawrence and Andrew, who have been developing. You've got to just remember that they are trad climbers, or were very good trad climbers as well. So they've done a lot of trad climbing, and I think a lot of people forget that. So they do know, like, where, where, you know, what's it, what is a trad crag and what's not. And I think that's sometimes forgotten, that these guys were pretty good trad climbers. And that should just be made note. That should be noted.
Okay. We didn't talk too much about the bouldering sort of scene up there now. I think you spend a lot of time, particularly Torridon.
Yeah, there's a good bouldering scene. Everyone goes to Torridon Boulders. I've spent a bit of time there. I think bouldering's my weakest discipline.
Is it?
Yeah, okay. I'm rubbish at bouldering. I'm very weak. I'm a weak climber, me.
What's your strongest? What's your strongest discipline?
Oh, I don't know. I guess going trad climbing. Trad climbing, yeah, on site. I really enjoy on site trad climbing. That's, for me, that's what it's all about. Bouldering, yeah, there's a good scene. There's a good bouldering scene. Folk come up. I love spending time at the boulders. That's where I'm going to go tomorrow. And I'll just enjoy just pottering around there. I love climbing on sandstone. And there's lots of. There's, for me, there's like lifetime worth of harder stuff there, because I think the majority of the harder stuff I'll probably never get up, but I'll have fun trying it. It will only ever, going bouldering will only ever improve your sport climbing and your trad climbing, because bouldering, you're learning to experiment with moves, improve your technique, learn subtleties in rock.
Okay.
So as much as I sometimes struggle for the motivation of bouldering, going out, in turn, you got to see it as it is the foundation to improving all other aspects of your climbing. And I think people should embrace that view, because you can't just class. If you're a trad climber and you want to improve your trad climbing, but you don't want to go sport climbing, or you don't want to go bouldering, I think it'd be quite hard to improve, in my mind. But maybe someone else wants to argue with that point. I don't know.
So it sounds like you're very much into, yeah, doing the broad range of...
Broad range, which...
All-rounder, aren't you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you're an all-rounder, so you're never good at anything. I'm always getting distracted by something else. So I'll go bouldering tomorrow and go, I could be sport climbing. Or I could be out. Or no, we've been running today, so I don't need to go off another hill. I'm tired.
How many times today did you actually want to go climbing?
Well, the weather was pretty good, wasn't it? So there was no drive to go climbing. So I was okay. Hey, I needed my hill fix. I love being in the mountains. Yeah. I love just, you know, and yeah, as I said at the very beginning, enjoy just going out in the mountains for a couple of hours, just, you know, running around. Yeah, that's how I got into climbing, is being in the mountains. You know, I started off hill walking with big hill walking boots and a rucksack, and then you go into climbing, and I'd like to think that I'll always be involved in the mountains in some way, you know, and I'm sure there'll be a time where you're just going out to enjoy a nice hill walk.
Yeah.
And I think we were talking about it earlier. I'm not saying feeding the soul or whatever, but sometimes you just, even though it's good weather and you want to go climbing, there's just this draw just to go into the northwest and just lose yourself in the hills for a bit and just sort of, I don't know, feed the rat. Just get that fix of just being there, looking at the views, just having that physical movement over ground. It's really nice.
And sometimes when the weather's good, I remember sometimes feeling like paralyzed by possibility. There's just so many options of where to do and what to do, what to go at, projects, like for me running kind of projects. But actually, as soon as you just commit to something and get out, that's kind of fades away.
I think that's,
just enjoy being out.
I think that's, you know, friends, close friends will know exactly. I'm terrible for that, particularly in the spring.
Okay.
Because you're going to have good ice and Ben Nevis. And then there's going to be good rock climbing conditions as well. And now I want a set of ski tuning skis. There's going to be good spring snow somewhere.
There's going to be some conflict.
There's already conflicts. Yeah. You know, now I've got a mountain bike, but that's low on the priority list at the moment. So, yeah, but you just said it there. Once you commit to something, you'll always have a good time.
What I wanted to ask was about what would you like to see happening in the mountains, sort of, or how people use the mountains going forward? It's quite an open question. Are there things, are trends you've noticed that worry you, or things you've noticed that that you think are really good?
Yeah, it's a broad question that, and there's you know, that can mean a lot of different things. You know, I could talk about head pointing routes, pre-practicing trad routes, or we could go and talk about pegs, replacing pegs. So I can maybe touch upon those two things. How do people approach the mountains? I'm culprit to going head pointing as well. However, there is a bit of me going, I did try quite a lot of these routes, you know, ground up and on site. I hope people continue to do that.
Is head pointing when you've abseiled down it?
Well, head pointing would be when you've abseiled down it, you fix the rope, you're practicing the moves, you're sorting the gear out. So it's like a red point. You know what's coming up. And I've definitely found myself this year head pointing. I've done it for a few years, but this year in particular, I've head pointed quite a lot of routes. And there's nothing wrong with it. But I just hope that there's still people still, you know, preserve that sort of on site, or going and have a, you know, going and trying at least. But it's a bit. That's my view. It's also a very selfish view, because for someone, their route could be their limit. So why should they not be allowed to go and abseil down it just because someone else has on-sighted it? So, you know, in some ways I should retract what I've just said, but it's just, I guess you're trying to just preserve that bit of, you know, adventure and, you know,
maybe the wildness and adventure of that area.
The minute you start abbing down routes, you just remove the unknown a bit, don't you?
I was thinking, bringing it back for the runners. I was just speaking to someone last night actually, and we talked a wee bit about the difference between a kind of athletic performance and more of a sort of adventure. And in running, we were talking about, you know, there's different things like the Rigby Round and the Cairngorms, which is meant to be done on site, so you haven't recce'd it, all the way through to something like, you know, for me to go in Tranter's Round. You know, I know those hills so well that I don't, you know, I might have the map in my, I'd have the map in my bag for bad weather or whatever, but I'd never need to look at it if it was, you know, if it was fine weather, because I just know where I'm going. And I suppose there is an argument that that's, it's no less of a challenge, but you've removed a bit of the kind of the wildness and maybe the sort of adventurousness out of it. And it's more about the kind of, how far can I push myself athletically?
Yeah.
And maybe different people are going to feel, well, we're all going to fluctuate where we are on that line, aren't we, of purity between the on-site and the, the practice.
And the more that people get into climbing or running, I think that's the beauty about this mountain sport that we're all involved in, is there's no rule.
Yeah.
There's no one there saying, this is the rule. This is, you know, you've got to do it in this style. I just sometimes think that, I guess you just grow up going, well, these are the routes you try to score. You know, you go out, you pack your bag and you go out and you unflick your rope at the bottom of the cliff and then you go up. And you just do that and you as you gain more experience, the routes become a bit harder and harder and harder. And then I think then you reach that point of, ah, these routes are getting quite serious now. So you start to put a rope down it. And it seems accepted for that, but then for someone else, they can go and do the same thing, but their seriousness might stop at a different level. So why should I then say, oh yeah, go and put your rope down? You know, you can't put your rope down that because no one else put the rope down it. Yeah, they're having that for them. That's their adventure. They want to keep it safe because at the end of the day, no one wants to hurt themselves. No. And looking back, my climbing history knowledge is not exactly amazing, but I certainly think that there was egos in the past, maybe not so much here, but UK, where you went out and you did the hardest, boldest routes where you fall off and you're going to die and really hurt yourself. I don't want to do that. And I don't think none of my friends want to do that. You kind of, and I think there is a shift now, which is probably pretty healthy. Kind of wanting to keep it safe, or safer.
Is there maybe more choice now in modern climbing that you can choose to make it safer? Like, well, I mean, this undoubtedly is, because when it was hemp ropes and things, then
yeah,
it was dangerous every time you went.
We've all got modern kit. And there's a lot more knowledge and information out there about routes, and then you'll know that so-and-so's done it like this way, and there's more information out there about climbing routes. There's videos of people doing boulder problems, not so much sport routes or trad routes, because that'd be boring to watch. But you see pro climbers head pointing routes. And maybe people get influenced by that. I don't know. I go head pointing. I'm the biggest hypocrite ever. No,
it's interesting too.
And then the other thing we're talking there about, I guess, touched on at the very start was like pegs. And what do I think of pegs? Well, I don't know. They're quite handy when it's a good peg and you're strung out. Should they be replaced? You can do an entire podcast on that. I think with modern kit, the way I see it is, if you can protect a route with modern kit without the peg that keeps the same grade, fine, don't replace the peg. If you can climb the route without the peg and it makes it a bit bolder but still an amenable grade, and the one I'm probably thinking of would be like Naked Ape. I've not done that route. You know, it used to be 5, but I think it's sort of settled at E6. We're talking about the Naked Ape and Craig and okay. Dulock.
And this is rock climbing.
It's a rock climbing.
Pegs on rock climbs.
Yeah, pegs and rock climbs. Yeah, sorry.
Because winter, anything goes, right?
Winter, anything goes in winter. You get the knee on, you get the belly on. Yeah, anything goes in winter. Where was I going with it? You know, if the route is still sort of amenable, I think it's when the route becomes a total chop route. That's when I begin to go, oh, maybe you can replace the peg. But then you bring in the argument, oh, why didn't you put a bolt in? And then I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
I'm going to leave that for more more climbing knowledgeable interviewers to tackle that. What, just kind of wrapping up, thinking about you going forward, what, any particular plans or ambitions that you'd like to share?
I guess to try and stay healthy and injury free. I think it's like one personal thing is preserve your body, to allow you to keep going out and enjoying things, because there's nothing worse than being plagued by injury and not being able to do things. So address that. There's routes I want to go and do in the Northwest. There's winter routes I've not done. Most of them are like quite, you know, they're steady routes. I've not done like, there's some stuff on in the Fannix I've not done. There's a new route in Ben Van I'd like to go and do. But will I have a great ride doing it? I don't know. It looks really hard. Probably beyond my pay grade, but it might be worth going and having a look.
So these are new hard, like kind of.
Yeah, I guess the stuff would be. Yeah, that would be proper hard. As I say, probably too hard for me. But yeah, I guess you want to go and at least have a look at it. I do find new routing and sands done quite hard. I remember being with Martin Moran and Chelak, and he set me off up some pitch, which we were just, it's just right of the established route, Wailing Wall. And I remember just, yeah, feeling pretty stressed on that thing, and you know, ended up down climbing off it. And it later became a grade 10, which Greg McInnes and Guy Robertson put up. And yeah, when I read that, I thought, I'm glad I didn't get stuck into that thing, you know. So so yeah, there's a few routes there I would like, and Ben Van, as I said, to go and try. And then I know we're talking about the Northwest, but there's routes elsewhere around the country I want to go and do as well. I've spent very little time over in the East and Craig and Duloc, so I want to go and do all those routes.
Keen for there.
And cycle for there. I've got my new mountain bike, so I can cycle in there now.
I've sort of got this mental image now of you like on Anchelic on some heinous wall, and it's like dark and your head torch beam and kind of zooming out on that. And maybe that's quite a good place to leave it, because
I think those days are over, to be honest. Yeah,
but I think that that kind of wildness and the adventure aspect of it kind of, you know, you've answered that thought of that wonder of mine as to why does he keep going back, and what is it about those kind of crags?
They require lots of skill set. They require you to be fit. There's effort. You got to carry a heavy rucksack. The long days, and yeah, I love it. There's something more about that than going. I enjoy sport climbing, but a long day in winter and Bene, you can't beat it. I like the suffering.
Brilliant. Right, let's get another cup of tea. Thanks everyone for listening. This has been really fun. And that's the end. Go Mountain Goats. See you next time.